Blog Talk Radio.
You really don't understand, do you? Hey, man, don't you realize in order for us to make this thing work, man, we've got to get rid of the pimps and the pushers and the prostitutes and then start all over again clean.
Hey, look, nobody's pushing me anyway, okay? I mean, not you, not the cops, nobody, man. I mean, you want to get rid of the pushers, I'll help you. But don't send your people after me.
John, you just see that we can't get rid of one without getting rid of the other. We got to come down on both of them at the same time on this whole thing to work with people.
You know, nobody's closing me out of my business.
This is Gay Son and Friends, right? This is Citizen Payne. That's Willie Hutch, and that's from the Mac. Max Julian, Roger Mosley in the beginning of the scene. And this is Brothers Gonna Work It Out. You know, this is an old school song. Came out when I was a kid in the 70s, right? And it's a song of empowerment for our people, for black people. You know, I mean, the Mac is a movie about a pimp, a guy and the pimps and stuff like that. And his brother is a revolutionary, and that is part of that scene. And it reminds me of my childhood, my formative years. I was born in one of those cities that come to mind when you hear these type of songs, and a time that comes to mind when you hear these type of songs. It was a decade of violence, a decade of assassinations, a decade of protest, a decade of progress, a decade that made people question America and its standing in the world. Interesting, isn't it? Almost sounds like this decade. But that's the decade I was born into. That's the city I was born into. And so all of this stuff here that we're experiencing now is, well, it's kind of nothing new to me. It's kind of par for the course. You can say that the area that I'm from, that we're from, other people I'm including in this, we were trained for this, born into this. The children of the revolutionaries, the freedom fighters, the civil rights activists, and the like. And so there's a respect that we do have for the system, the American system to a certain degree. The respect is expecting it to live up to its own declarations, its own declaration is about itself, a country that writes down its principles, takes the time to make a big presentation and a big to-do about their principles and our bylines and what we're about, their mission statement. That's all just hooey. I was looking for another word to poo. It's all just smoke and mirrors, right? The declaration, our mission statement. We are the United States. We're this, we're that, and blah, 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 blah. And it's all fun and games until somebody gets hurt, right? Until the rules don't work the way you want to. And then we really see who really believes in democracy and who believes in democracy for a few, like I like to say. A supremacy type of democracy, which, you know, not a democracy, but you know, you really see who's who when things don't work out the way they want to work out. Obviously, if you spend time in a society where you were the privileged member of society, I call it having preferred citizenship. If you had those things available to you, you probably would not want to give them up, because who wants to give up any advantages that they have in life? Who? Even those who have more than enough, they don't want to give up anything they have. There's very few I wouldn't say very few, but you got to find people who have more than enough that are willing to share their blessings. And a lot of those people that believe in blessings and Jesus and Christianity, and boy, they sure seem, some of them, to be hypocritical, don't they? I mean, let me just put it like this. If you engage in idolatry, if you have a big old fat golden statue of something nowadays, as a Christian, that you're wheeling through the hotel, I don't get it, man. It's just, I guess irony is something that you would expect to be lost on people who might not be college educated, right? I don't know. It's just, it would be comedy. Well, it's a little bit more comedic now because the dude ain't in charge no more, right? And he's just got his comedic show. But it could be complete comedy if it wasn't really true. And the thing that I guess what we want to do here is get everybody to pay attention from all sides, right? Get information from all areas, decipher it, and chart your course to go forward, right? How you going to make your plan of action, how you going to live your life, whatever. But, you know, the information is, even from those who claim to be on your side, might be askew. And I always talk about, you know, the numbers that they're throwing out in terms of population they don't describe to the average person. Clearly, there's a deficit of knowledge about the process, the political process in our country and things like that. There's a deficit of knowledge, period, right? That's the whole thing. Knowledge reigns supreme, KRS-One. You don't have the knowledge, you can't make good decisions. So when you get the population thinking that, yeah, we're 75 million, we voted for this dude, and that's only 80 million, only looks like another 10 million have voted for the other side, right? And if you believe anything and you're one of those people who's willing to buy a bridge in Brooklyn, then you might believe that this guy won the election. If you only believe that we had 74 million, they had 80 million, and you only think that there's about 150 million people in the country, right? So it's the media's job to say, well, that's only really half the population. Those are all the people that participated in the voting process, but it's actually half the population. So what we need to do in a democracy is find out. The question is not what's Joe Biden going to do because half the country voted for Donald Trump. No, that's not the question. The question is, how do we get the rest of the population involved in the electoral process? How do we get the other 150 million people that live in this country excited enough about our government and our way of life to participate? Because that should show you something much greater about our country than who voted for who. The fact that there's half of the population chooses to not even get involved. That's really the key. But you see, either side that I see, the ones that I prefer to watch and the ones that I don't prefer to watch, neither one of them says it for their own personal interests. Let's bring the fellas in here. We've got a lot to talk about. Let's bring in, I believe this would be Byron, the historian. What's up, Byron? How you doing? Oh, we got the Congressman Payne. He's going to be calling in a couple of minutes. Anybody that wants to call in, 323-679-0906, if you got some questions or comments. And what's up, B?
Well, you know, I'm here in Washington, D.C., the cesspool of our nation.
Hold on. I got you muted.
Okay, here I am. Yes. Well, you know, I'm here in Washington, D.C., which I consider the cesspool of our nation. But it is, we are pouring a lot of riddit into the wells of Congress. And this is a very interesting date in history, Eric. And I'm glad you have the congressman coming on tonight, because in this date, Saturday, March the 2nd, the date was 1867. And on this date was the Reconstruction Act decided. Now, hear this. This is a little short piece of history because it really is implying what's going on right now in the well of Congress. And I know a congressman would like to opine on this, because the Reconstruction Acts were decided in 1867. They were four statutes passed during the Reconstruction era by the 40th United States Congress, addressing requirement for Southern states to be readmitted to the Union. Called the Military Reconstruction Acts, the actual title of the initial legislation was an act to provide for the more efficient government of the rebel states. And it was passed on March the 4th, 1867. Fulfillment of the requirements of the acts was necessary for the former Confederate states to be readmitted to the Union from military and federal control that was imposed during and after the American Civil War. The acts excluded Tennessee, which had already ratified the 14th Amendment and had been readmitted to the Union on July 24, 1866. Now, why is that act important as it relates to today, Eric? Because we've got 137 congresspersons and added senators, 137, who violated their oath of the Constitution in participating in the insurrection on January the 6th, 2021. Those same senators voted to disenfranchise voters, mostly people of color, because they lost the election. They should be immediately expelled from the Congress. And if the Democrats really want to take control, show your power now, because these same racists participated in a CPAC event, which was more a Ku Klux Klan convention than it was anything else.
So you're saying,
I'll stop right there.
Really quickly, before we bring it, Wayne, and you said this act, what did this act do again now? Because I kind of missed
this
a little bit.
This is the act that the Southern states were forced to swear allegiance to the federal government known as the United States of America, the Confederate States. In order for them to come back into the Union itself, they had to swear allegiance to the federal government, that they, you know, it's like recanting their evil ways. And of course, Andrew Johnson tried to reverse this, which why he came within one vote of being impeached. So is history repeating itself? Man, we are marching in the same lockstep that we did in Reconstruction. And do you know in 1871? Now, that's interesting because
hold on right there, Byron. Hold right there. Let's bring Wayne in real quick before you jump off all into that. Let's bring Wayne Wayne Gilman, the legendary newsman, in here while we can. Wayne, how you doing this evening?
I guess, all right, gentlemen. I tell you, Byron is on a roll, and I really feel, you know, just to piggyback on what he's saying, that there should be a requirement that anyone running for elective office have a thorough understanding of this country's history. You know, I mean, you may not be able to recite or recount the way Byron, you know, says things. He's a walking anthology on what's going on. I'm not saying this to sound humorous either, but the bottom line is that this is what's wrong with America right now. I mean, the experiment is working if everything is firing, if all the cylinders are firing properly. It's when people want to change the rules, when efforts are now currently being made to suppress the vote, you know, that all these legendary figures that we recently lost to the civil rights movement within the last couple of years, starting with Elijah Cummings and today's death of Vernon Jordan, you know, we can't afford to go back, you know, and I think we've made a lot of progress.
Right. That's just it. Allegiance, I don't mean to cut you off really quick, but I think what Byron is talking about in this point, I don't want to get too deep into this because we've got some other things I want to talk about, but it is allegiance. Right, Byron, the act you're talking about, that these Southern states swore allegiance to get back in to join the rest of the nation and the rest of the states. So even though these we have, you know, the Constitution and people are supposed to be doing their job, who their allegiance is to, that's really what calls it, what's comes into question. You know, I mean, these Congress people who should be expelled, that Byron is talking about expelling, you know, their allegiance is supposed to be to the Constitution, which is the point you're making, I believe, B, if I'm not mistaken, and correct me if
that
I'm wrong.
That is correct. Yes, sir.
And it's all about who their allegiance really is to, because they can get up there and swear allegiance to the United States, but clearly it's not – they're not following through or honoring that allegiance to that piece of paper. They're honoring that allegiance to their unspoken – talked about out loud allegiance to their white supremacy. And the whole question is, we know who those who's on the other side. They're letting us know who they are. But there's a lot that claim to be on our side that are doing, you know, their allegiance is down with the white supremacy.
And you know, Eric and Wayne, I was watching the hearings today with the current director of the FBI. And something struck me rather clearly, because I recall when Barr was being vetted on the Hill for his position as Attorney General, Congresswoman from California asked him specifically, was there in essence, what were domestic terrorist groups, about the Klan, about the Proud Boys, mm-hmm. about the network of white supremacy groups that were infiltrating into our political system, and was there concern on behalf of the Justice Department, under his opinion, that this needed to be a priority? So today, when Christopher Wray was sitting at that well and they asked him, do you think the Ku Klux Klan is a domestic terrorist group? He waffled. He waffled as if to say, oh, I don't know, but because we can't really define what the domestic terrorist is, and it's not Al-Qaeda, it's not the other terrorists. You know what? That's at the point at which the sergeant of arms should have invited him out of that well, because he was lying in front of a Congress again. I mean, I tell you, the Democrats are going to have to go nuclear on some of these people because they're sitting up there playing pity pat with us.
Coulda, shoulda, woulda, right? I mean, coulda, shoulda, woulda. That's what I'm talking about, allegiance. I mean, you had the hearing since we've been off this last episode. We had a hearing with the Capitol Hill Police and the sergeant of arms and the House and the Senate. And all of these are acting like, well, no, we didn't get the, you know, clearly. There's some conspiracy type of things going on, and someone's allegiance was not to the government of the United States. I mean, I was just sitting there listening to that particular hearing when they had Sun on, Captain Sun, I guess the chief of the Capitol Hill Police, and he was talking about the emails going around, this and that. But the one thing that came to mind is, like, at what point, you know, it's a lot of BS, but at what point do you say, oh, you look out the window and you see 8,000, you know what's walking by with bats and a couple of them looking kind of rowdy. At what point do you say, oh, hey, maybe I need to, hey, maybe we need to call somebody about this hill. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm talking about. It's not hard. It wasn't hard to tell. So clearly, by the rules of deduction, I can only assume that it must be somehow some sort of an inside job, because all of the obvious logical steps are not taken for this particular situation. So that
did you watch? Happen to watch Joy Reid this evening when Malcolm Nance was on, because he really broke it down. Let me tell you something about Washington D.C. that most people don't even realize. This city is the most observed, both publicly and inside privately, by the 17 intelligence agencies in our nation. Everything that's spoken in this city is picked up by some observer that is absolutely monitoring everything. And he said, I quote him, he said, what Holly did today was gaslighting, because it's probably based on the fact that that Capitol has records of everything that went on that day, everything. And his name is coming up, I am sure, as is the other Republicans who got the call from the president while the insurrection was going on. They absolutely know for a fact who was in on everything. So, you know, at some point, we have got to break it all down. That's what I'm trying to tell you. I want to know from the congressman how he feels, because he was there.
Yeah, he was there. Let's put a pin in it. He was there. Let's put a pin in it. Let's put a pin in it real quick. It's all, like I said, it's all about allegiance. I don't want to get too far off in that. I want to jump to Andrew Cuomo, Wayne, unless you wanted to jump, unless you wanted to make a point, Wayne, unless you wanted to make a point about the previous subject. But
I just want to say quickly that, I mean, the only way that we're going to get any definitive information is if there's some commission form and, you know, they go into it blow by blow. But is the congressman standing by? Cause
no, he's not, but I don't want to get too far. I want to jump to I want to get to a number of subjects. Let's not get too deep off into that before we jump off even more. We've been on a couple of minutes. Let's jump on Andrew Cuomo real quick.
I'm shocked. I'm not saying I have no empirical evidence, and I know what it's like to have been accused falsely, and I know what it's like to have been a victim of that. So I have interviewed him a couple of times in the past. I knew his father better than I knew him. When I was still doing things on a regular basis, he was down in D.C. with the Clintons, and of course, New York is the home state, and he was always being groomed to take over. In my opinion, that was his vision. But, you know, there's something about being governor of New York and the whole issue with, you know, promiscuity on one level. We had that thing with Elliot Spitzer and Schneiderman, who was also brought down. You know, they're in positions of power, and I don't want to. You know, I was very proud of his behavior going back to the governor now. Last year, because we had no leadership with respect to the pandemic. Mm-hmm. But, he's been out there 3 years. He wants to do a fourth term. It seems that way. I think Biden was about to offer him a job. And, you can't walk around and act like you're king, because there's always some snake, you know, moving around in the weeds. And, the big thing was the nursing home scandal, which never really went away. And then he had a news conference with the medical authorities, and he gave a cogent response. I thought to a certain extent that died down. But the minute the sexual harassment charge came up with the first person, I said, but all this other stuff that goes on, and then he admits, you know, you can't do that. The Me Too movement, if anything, he should have taken a page out of Charlie Rose, Matt Lauer, even a lawyer that he's hired that used to represent the movie mogul who's in prison here now. I can't think of the guy's name.
Weinstein,
right, you know. So I mean, the thing is that I would have been extraordinarily careful, and he may have some pressures. You know, he had a failed marriage for whatever reasons. Then his girlfriend for some long standing, they parted. I think she went through a crisis with her health, and then somebody reminded me today that she had moved back to the West Coast to be with her mom, and he's in this big edifice by himself, and he has a lot of responsibility. And I've heard people say on the down low that, you know, he runs the ship like, and this is not to put him down, but he's got like a mafia style when it comes to, dealing with issues. But to say that publicly that I was playful and that was considered okay. You know,
He sounded a little nutty. This is a note to all older dudes that want to think you want to date the little younger women. They will let you know when they want to get with you or when they find you attractive. You ain't got to be, I don't know if you guys have seen this picture of him with his head, touching the girl's cheek.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She clearly is uncomfortable in that picture. Two, you know, at the job, he's the governor. So asking, I'm pretty sure that that's going to make somebody uncomfortable, asking them about their sex life, a younger employee, female, that's in a male dominant. Just the whole flavor, man. It seems like he would have been a little smarter than me. I don't know, man. Yeah,
exactly. You know, I mean, he has so much contact. I mean, he could be dating somebody in the media. It doesn't have to be someone that has to answer to him. You know, I'm not saying that people, you know, aren't attracted to one another, but you have to know where to cross, you know, where you draw the line in terms of different things. And that's it. And, you know, men are wired differently. And women sometimes, you know, they'll throw the hamburger out there and they know somebody, some dog is going to come along and would want that meat. And I'm not saying that to be disrespectful, but I do know
that
there are occasions.
You did say throw the hamburger. Just we're already in that path. Just keep going, bro. Keep going.
I'm going to tell you just how I know in Brooklyn. You know, that's where I'm from. They throw the hamburger out there, and some pit bull's going to come
again.
Along.
That's two, B. That's two. This guy does it.
Hey.
Well,
you know,
We got the congressman on the other line. We don't need. I think the more we talk about this subject, we're going to get phone calls, so.
Yeah. Well, hey.
That's Andrew's problem.
That's why I said we should deal with the congressman first. Go ahead.
I hope the governor, it, you know, works out, whatever. But let's bring in Congressman Payne here. Since we got the opportunity to talk a little.
Medium rare, please.
Medium rare. There he is. All right. He's right on time. Oh, boy. Got it at a certain age, man.
Oh my God!
So what's happening, Congressman Payne?
Well, what are we talking about? We were ordering burgers.
Yes, exactly. And the burger will be at your house.
Medium rare,
that's
please.
Right. That's a good one. So what's you guys got the COVID?
I stepped in it tonight.
Hold the pickles, hold the lettuce.
What do you want to tell the people? You guys got the COVID bill? Coming out, do you want to share something to any of your potential constituents besides me that might hear you? How is it since the change in administration? There you go.
It's like night and day. It's like a brand new day. It's like I can breathe again. It's like there really are some rational people that you may not agree with every day, but they're willing to listen and willing to work from reality. So it's a wonderful thing with this new administration. And very delighted and looking forward to moving ahead.
How soon will people be getting checks? That's what everybody want to know. I mean, I know here's the deal for me, right? Sometimes people that are so extreme, you know, some of the progressives are upset because, you know, the $15 minimum wage thing had to go away for this particular time. But a lot of times people don't understand that when you're at home and when you're going paycheck to paycheck, you don't got time for people to be talking. After a certain time, you want your rep to say, okay, deal. Because I need to get my people paid right now. And I know you understand that, and that's how we were brought up, that, you know, you got to serve your constituents. And so people want to know, like, you know, when the check's coming. That's what they want to know.
Right. And you know, to that point, you know, my brothers and sisters, my progressive brothers and sisters, there's nobody – that wanted to see that more than me be in there. I'm just thinking every single day with respect to how does anyone in this country live on less, I mean, $15,000 a year in this country? What is that? It's impossible. And basically that's all we're talking about, bringing it up. I mean, bringing it beyond that. I mean, you know, anybody, it's just absurd. $7.25, I believe it is, right now. Come on. Who can raise a family on that?
Exactly.
In this country, you should be able to raise a family on a 40-hour a week job. And whatever that number comes down to, that's what the minimum wage should be.
Right. That's the promise of America.
No one in this country should be working on more than a 40-hour work week unless it's going to increase their compensation by doing overtime. And it's just absurd. Two jobs, three jobs. When will you have time to enjoy the American dream? Because if you're not working, you sleep.
That's it.
And, Congressman
Payne.
Yeah.
This is Byron Saunders. I have to share this with you because in 2005, I did 5 months of post-Katrina work in New Orleans and Slidell, Louisiana. It was so bad at that time that the McDonald's, and back then it was $5 and something an hour, McDonald's posted on their billboard where they have the million burgers sold, posted because they couldn't get enough people to work in the fast food industry, posted on their billboards paying $10 an hour. And I can tell you, I don't remember not one peep from Senator Kennedy from the great state of Louisiana raising any objections whatsoever at that time. $10 an hour they were paying. That was in 2005. So all this bluster about raising it is going to break down the corporate commitment to it. You know, that's all BS because this past administration gave corporate America a $1.3 trillion tax cut to do one thing, create jobs. And in the month of December, this country only created 44,000 jobs. 30 of them were governmental jobs. So where was corporate America?
Right.
They weren't.
Right. All that tax cut does is let them keep more money in their pocket.
Exactly.
Which is the bottom line, and when it's all, you know, and it's all structured for that. And so, we're gonna continue to fight for $15 an hour. It's the moral thing to do.
So is this
Congressman Payne, I hate to interrupt,
let me just say real quick. Actually, Eric, the bill went over to the Senate with the $15 an hour. Ms. Pelosi said that she wasn't cutting it out, even though we know it was going to die over there in the Senate. We did what we were supposed to do. We put it on them. Fine. If you're going to cut it, we're not doing it over here. This is what the American people want. This is what we're voting for. And if you have the gumption and the cojones to cut it out, then God bless you. You tell the American people they don't deserve a living wage.
Okay.
And I'm glad you said that because my
question
is.
Hold on, Wayne. Hold on. I just want everybody to understand. So what happens then? They cut it out. Then because people want to know how long is that going to delay them getting checks? Maybe you might want to explain.
No, that doesn't delay them getting checks. That just amends the bill that we sent over to them. The bill had a minimum wage of $15 an hour as part of that reconciliation. And what happened was that there was a parliamentary inquiry to whether or not that was constitutional. And the parliamentarian of the Senate, who does have the power to say so or not, deemed it, not constitutional and could not be in the bill. So the Republicans will not have that in their bill. And so that has nothing to do with the amount of the checks that the American people will be getting. It'll be $1,400 with the supplemental $600 unemployment amount that they'll be getting. So it'll be $2,000. And based on your family's economic situation, there are many ways that number could get as high as $10,000. So, there's some formulas that, depending on what you qualify for, it could mean as much as $10,000 to the family, from what I understand.
So it'll be at least
$1,500, and the supplemental unemployment $600, so it would be $2,000.
And it's still going to hit people in time before their other checks expire, before their other benefits expire?
Yeah, we're trying to make sure that happens, yes. Well, now it's in the Senate's hands, so we've done our part. We've done it in time for them not to miss any of their benefits. But, you know, depending on what the Senate does, that could delay it.
See, this is part of the process that I want people that might be listening to us or don't understand how things work. So everybody understands the Congress, Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, they've got the bill out with your benefits exactly how they want it, with the $15 in. Now the Senate, which is democratically controlled, although very narrowly, has their job, and they're being blocked by the Republicans that want to take out the $15 an hour. So depending how long, whether that they strip that out of the bill, voting it up or down, and I suppose that would depend on whether Schumer's willing to allow it to get taken out, vote on it, and then
he really doesn't have a choice, because the parliamentarian of the Senate has deemed it that it can't be in the bill. So it was a parliamentary procedure that has taken it out. So even if Schumer wanted in there, it could not be in this bill, because it's a reconciliation bill, and whatever the parliamentarian, whatever the rules are, the parliamentarian deemed it not being allowed in the bill.
So once that bill is no longer has a $15 an hour increase, and it passes,
it'll be debated it'll be debated and passed or turned down in the Senate.
And then it either needs to come back to you guys if it's passed, or you guys.
No, it goes to the president for signature.
Okay, so it doesn't have to take that one more step got it. That's what I wanted to take everybody to see. And so everybody listening, just as long as it takes for them to debate it and get it out of the Senate, then it goes to the president, it becomes law, and you're going to get your benefits. Hopefully, if everything goes according to plan, then you get it before your stuff expires. I understand, because I've been on unemployment as an entertainer. Certainly Byron has. I'm sure we all have it one time or another. So you understand that anything that happens within the government, certainly when people are taking the time to debate, at the other end of the spectrum, the average person is waiting. So that's why, you know, I talk about, you know, it's good to stick to your values, and people want to be extreme on either side. But, you know, at the end of the day, you got to be practical eventually and know that somebody is waiting and you're holding some people up, and you got to make that decision. When is the best time to pull the trigger? Wayne, you guys wanted to jump in. I just wanted to make sure everybody
understood. Go
ahead.
Point on that. Yeah, that everybody involved in this process is of the same thought. We wanted to move it quickly. Having a majority of senators as Democrats want to move it quickly, and obviously the president wants to move it quickly. So everybody involved at this point wants to expedite it. So it will happen as soon as we can if the Republicans don't pull any procedural shenanigans with it.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, it's very hopeful. One of the things that just bothers me is, and I don't even feel the need that he's worthy of the title of senator, what can Democrats do about Joe Manchin? Isn't there poverty in his state?
Oh, there's quite a bit of poverty in his state, but he's one of those senators that kind of is like on a tightrope. He's a Democrat in a largely Republican state. So he kind of has to play it to the center more than most of us would in order to keep his job. So, you know, he's frustrating to us, but a lot of us, you know, understand what he's dealing with. So,
Congressman Payne, question
yes.
for you. As you know, there is a root rot in the Congress, worse than the stench of the urine and the feces left by rioting Republicans on January the 6th. Their GOP polls. Today is the anniversary, 1867, of the Reconstruction Act, which engaged the 14th Amendment, Section 3, when they were had to swear allegiance to the Union just to get back into the state. We got 137 congresspersons and senators added together that have sworn to violate the Constitution under the 14th Amendment. What are we going to do with these people?
No, I thought it was 140. But
140, yes.
We're paying close attention to them, and I have sworn that I will not do anything with any of them in the House of Representatives. I do not acknowledge them. I do not see them, and any legislation they have, or I don't want them on any of my bills. So they do not exist to me. If they do not acknowledge the President of the United States, I do not acknowledge them. And, you know, I'm operating from that stance. So anybody that is in that 140 are not welcome to be on my bills. I do not acknowledge or identify anything that they're doing. And they do not exist to me. So that's how I'm handling it.
So what do you all politics, you know, tell we came up with politics as local, right? My cousin still lives on the same block that we used to play on when we were 10. They lived in the same house for a long time, and when we were adults before they had their own house. And I say that to say...
Yeah, my big move was moving from 14 to 19 across the street. That was a major move in my life.
Right. So the average person understand, you know, we understand that's we're regular people, you know, we understand that. So when something happens in the community, you know, we're seeing people, my cousin sees people, you know, when he's at home work doing his district work, sees community people every day. And so when the snow is piled up, it's piled up in his house too in the street. And when the lights go off on the street, the same thing happens. He's not getting out of town. He works in D.C., back and forth. So he doesn't choose to leave town when there's a blizzard, perhaps the first time ever in your state. So I'm just wondering, and gentlemen, you're welcome to comment on Ted Cruz's wild adventure that he had in probably one of the most inopportune times. I don't understand the timing of some of these individuals. And certainly a guy like that, but I don't know if you have any thoughts, Congressman. First, or whether that's something that
he is a hypocrite. He is a charlatan. He is a joke. He does not care about the people of Texas or this country. He puts on a good, you know, a good face, but he obviously. He could care less. He was saying, hey, you know, I can get out of here. Let's get the hell out of here. I can leave. So, hey, let's go.
Yeah.
I think the thing that's really, you know, so inappropriate, for lack of better words at this point, is the fact that he would use his children as an excuse. But I really believe that group, and he's part of the 140, that they're facing a case of diminishing returns. Anybody who's had a chance to check in or go in and out the CPAC conference this past week, you know, even Trump thinks he may have control of the party. There was a survey done, among some of them, and not everybody's in lockstep with what's going on. You know, the Republicans are falling apart, and I'd like to think that in the next couple of years that the Democrats will do more to solidify our base, that we don't have to go through this again. I mean, Cruz should be gone. Rubio should be gone. All of them that parrot the same nonsense. The governor of Texas, another one, felt that we should open the state next week. They just went through a major crisis down there, and we still have the pandemic going on, and they think it's over. Same thing with the one in Florida. You know, it's a free state. You know, and this is where our problems begin. And I don't know what it's going to take to change it, but I do know that the Democrats have got to be in lockstep and trying to repeat what we did here in 2020, again in 2022 and 24, and, you know, right, from here on out.
I have a question. What's the appetite for other members in the party to really take a page out of the Republicans' playbook in terms of just going straight ahead? If they don't want to deal, we're not going to waste time trying to, we try to be unified. Clearly, their words are disingenuous. They don't mean anything when they say they want to unify the country, work for the people. What's the appetite for people? Just let's get it done. We're not messing around no more. Is there that feeling in the party pervasive?
It's just fairly complicated. There's some of that feeling, but it's kind of to defeat the purpose of kind of wait and see, which really defeats the purpose of your whole question. So I guess the answer is no. But
no.
Now I am of the feeling, and I've been trying to articulate this to my colleagues, like, look, we have a very short window in order to start to get the American people to see that we're different and we're trying to go in a different direction. And the direction that we want to go in is in the best interest of the American people, because there's no boogeyman right now. There's no one to point to. There's no Republicans in the way. they're all gone. We're in control of all three branches of the House. The executive and the legislative. So there's no one in our way, really, in the Senate or the House that can stifle us from making progress. So we need to step on the accelerator and step on it heavy and do what we need to do and let the chips fall where they may and hope the American people see what we're trying to do is in their best interest. They need results. They want results during this time. And we need to show them how they haven't had it under the past administration and how differently it will be under a Biden administration. So the first step is getting those checks to people, as you stated, expeditiously. This is not the last effort we want to make towards the American people, trying to help them during these difficult times. And so we need to get this one done so we can start working on the next one. But the clock is ticking, and the American people are watching.
What do you say to the people that are listening that talk about some people are kind of criticizing the vaccine situation rollout, but clearly anybody that's thinking or paying attention, you can't really criticize the new administration for any slight bumps in the rollout. What do you say to people that might still be having a problem? I spoke to someone today that was having a little problem. I helped them with the information, but what do you say to some of those people that might want to have a tendency to criticize already the new
administration? Well, I know it's right. I know it's difficult, and when you need the vaccine and want the vaccine and are unable to get it, There isn't much you can say to people, but you know, try to have a little bit of patience. The Biden administration is working on this diligently. It's their number one issue before anything else is COVID relief and that getting the vaccination out. We have gotten the vaccinations up to 2.5 million a day, and scientists say that we need to be at 3 million. So we're almost there. And now with the Johnson & Johnson vaccination coming out and it only needing one dose, one shot, that exponentially increases the number of vaccinations that we can achieve daily. We're just about there to the goal number of 3 million a day. And, you know, just be a little more patient. You know, the situation is getting better every day. And really the problem is the amount of vaccines that are available. So, you know, we're constantly working on that. They can only produce so many in the proper dosage a day. So we don't want to rush anything for it not to be safe. So that's basically where we are. But at the they feel that by July, there will be 1 billion doses available in this country and throughout the world. So we think in March and April, you'll see an uptick in the amount of people that can get the vaccination. So help is underway. Just have to hold on a little bit longer. But the Biden administration and eyewitnesses are doing everything in their power to get this out. You know, it took a little time for them to get in there and see what was what based on the lack of information and no information that that incompetent last administration left for people. So they've got their arms around it now. And, you know, Dr. Fauci's in there and he's seeing good things and it's moving forward. So we're very delighted with how things are moving. I know it's not quick enough for most people, but we're really doing the best we can.
And certainly, go ahead, Wayne. Real quick,
no, I just had a quick question. I'm glad you brought that up. Maybe you can provide an answer. I have my brother. He's in Pennsylvania. Called three hospitals today, and he's in the Pocono area. And I'm at a point now where he has comorbidities. I'd like to bring him back to New York. Is that advisable, or what do you think? Even Jersey, for that matter.
I think wherever is the best opportunity for to receive the vaccine, you should do it. Absolutely.
Okay.
I don't know what area he is, who his member of Congress is. Is he in the Philadelphia area?
Oh, no. He's in the Poconos, East Stroudsburg, Trump country.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so it probably wouldn't be very much help. If that's a possibility, I would do that based on, you know his health conditions, you know, better than I. So
yeah,
if that would be reasonable, I think that'd be feasible.
Thank you. Yeah. I just wanted to feel reassured that I was on the right path.
Let me just give out the phone number real quick. We're going to keep you for one more minute. I gave it out before, but it's 323-679-0906 if somebody wanted to make a comment or ask Congressman Payne a question. I see that you voted for the Equality Act, and the Equality Act that you voted for the 25th of February would prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity in a wide range of areas, including employment, housing, public spaces, and services, federally funded programs, education, credit opportunities, and jury service. You want to talk a little bit about your support in the Equality Act?
you know, all men are created equal and endowed with, you know, certain inalienable rights, and then so that one of those inalienable rights is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So, you know, what is good for one American should be good for every American, irrespective of their gender identity. So, it's just a matter, just like the name of the act, the Equality Act. It's about equal fairness, and for someone that has fought for civil rights all his life, and our family has, continued to fight for those rights, and my legacy is in that vein. How could I then turn around and say, well, no, you know, this group of Americans aren't allowed to benefit from that? So it's a matter of hypocrisy and equity for all living beings and human beings in this country.
All right. And I see that you also earned the Congressional Medal, the Congressional Award from the National Kidney Foundation for your work with, what is it, in relationship to diabetes?
Yeah, dialysis, diabetes. They recognize me. I've been a true advocate, and I might say selfishly, since I am a diabetic and am on dialysis, that, you know, I do the work in that area. But it's a labor of love, and also self-preservation that I do that. So I was very, very honored that they singled me out for my advocacy in that area. But,
I want you to talk about your bill, and this is the people that are diabetics. If you're listening, if you happen to come across this show, if you're listening now, really briefly, we got about 3 minutes, but if you could talk about really quickly, Chop, the bill that you came up with to keep people from losing their limbs and to try and explore these other medical techniques where they don't have to lose their limbs. Can you talk about that really quickly?
Yeah, that's something that I'm really in the process of. About a year or two ago, 3 years ago, I, once again, selfishly in, my studying about amputations, which I potentially was going to become one, I was looking into the, it was really the proliferation of amputations that I noticed, and I met a doctor who was working in that area, Dr. Peluso Faccaretti, who is a magnificent cardiac surgeon, and he has done a lot of work around preserving people from losing their limbs, and has really revascularized many patients, and has reduced the number of amputations in his area in Mississippi by 75%. He's reduced the number of amputations by 75% in the work that he's done. So I've partnered with him, and I'm working on doing the same thing across the country to stem the tide of unnecessary amputations. And you really need to have me back on to talk about that at length. But, there are people in this country, like in Mississippi, the usual suspects, Georgia, Arkansas, Mississippi, Alabama, where we found hospitals that use amputations as their revenue stream for the hospitals. So that's unconscionable. That's really criminal. And so that's my next mission, to stem the tide of unnecessary amputations in this country.
We'll bring you back to talk about that. We want to say thanks to Congressman Payne for calling in. Thanks for calling in and giving us some time. All right. We'll talk
Absolutely.
To you again soon. All right. Talk to you again soon. That's
all
it.
Right. Take care.
All right. Sorry. Congressman was saying take care to those of us.
Yeah. Congratulations. And I want to hear more about that myself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're definitely going to talk about that. Why don't you guys give a quick sign off? We got another 30 seconds. So, Wayne, you want to give the people some words of encouragement?
I'm going to say is keep the faith. I say that every week. I just hope things get better. That's all.
All right, Brother Wayne Gilman. We'll talk. We're going to do this again tomorrow. I'll get with you brothers later. Brother Byron Saunders, legendary historian.
Yes, sir.
Give the people your
peace
words.
Peace and love always, my brothers and sisters across the nation and globally. Thank you. Thank you for being a part of the positive peace
Gotta go.
Initiative.
Thanks, Brother Byron Saunders. 4321. This is Kay's son and friends. I'm Kay's son. Those are my friends, and that was my cousin. He's also your representative if you're in the area. All right? Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again soon.
You want to get rid of the pushes, I'll help you. But don't send your people after me. John, you just need to...